Well, Friday morning to you. Welcome to Light the Tower. Here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're always live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Glad to have you alongside. Also, as always, happy to have my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, a proud graduate of Florence High School.
I'm straight.
Rory Ward, the number 79 on that big purple jersey with white numerals. So proudly, he was an honorable mention All-District offensive lineman.
A little fluff for the letter jacket.
He might have looked like the grimace on the offensive line, but he's a pro to us. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That's Jeff Howe.
Thank you, Craig.
Sporting some Chick-fil-A this morning.
Yeah. Grab some. That's what happens when you get out of the house on time.
There you go. You've got to roll through and do that.
I've still got a baseball story to post, which, by the way, I'll give a little teaser to that today.
Yeah.
Whenever, I don't know what we're doing today for the notebook or whatever. Just gonna wing it today.
Some baseball for the notebook. We've got some. We could definitely do that.
Plenty of Texas football as always.
Yeah. Of course, our producer.
Oh, I forgot our weekly conversation with Mike Roach coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, I started to say we will kind of work that around visiting with Roach coming up at the bottom of the hour. Our producer, as always, is the purveyor of all good things, Flex ATX, because after all, in the final analysis, it's a flex.
It's a flex.
He's Jonathan John Donaldson, Jay Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. How you doing, Snoop?
What up? What up? Another broken pair of headphones.
Oh, okay.
Snoop,
right.
I told you, I put the... Are you not using the ones I put back there?
The new ones are broke.
How? They were new.
Somebody's breaking them.
So. Man.
It's all good.
No. I'm going to put some cameras in here and in there. I want to find out who's breaking stuff.
Yeah, there's another... set there.
I don't even know who these belong to.
Yeah. Those were purchased for the studio.
Okay.
There were several, and one of those is now one of the broken pairs. So that's all right.
But this one has one ear that works. That's good. I know I'm a little tired because I did see a 13-inning softball game yesterday.
Has one ear that works. 13 innings.
Yeah. But here I am. At least we won. Georgetown beat Victoria West 5-3 in the 13th inning, and game two today at 3 p.m.
There you go. All right, so big win for those Lady Eagles on the softball field last night. A lot to get to, certainly on the program, as Jeff mentioned. Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7, joins us at the bottom of the hour. 10:45, or thereabouts, later this hour anyway, we do bring you Inconceivable. Snoop. What does inconceivable on a Friday mean?
Flaccid.
Yeah, well, okay. That's one way to describe it.
Experiencing flaccidity.
Yeah.
As we go to the most flaccid state on the map and grab that low-hanging fruit from Florida on
Friday. That will do. But we've got some other stories as well that we'll get to. And plenty of other things. Yeah, there's still a lot of fallout on, Nick versus Jimbo, Jimbo versus Nick, they're all that stuff. I'm sure you guys have been overrun with all the memes that are coming out now with people fighting, guys rolling around and scrambling and all that kind of stuff. All of that business is happening now.
I need somebody to superimpose, take whoever you want, one face on Michael P.S. Hayes' body and the other face on Kerry Von Erich's body and
just let it roll.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's as close to being up your alley as a pro wrestling reference as I'm going to make on this show, Craig. Let mention the Freebirds and the Von Erichs.
Especially on a Friday.
Since your mentor, Bill Mercer, was the voice of world-class championship wrestling.
He'll be inducted in a special media induction tomorrow night
at
Texas Sports Hall of Fame, Waco. So will Brad Cham. So will Eric Nadell, the voice of the Texas Rangers. So will Randy Galloway. And Denny Freeman from the AP and the late Frank Gleiber. All of those guys will be inducted in Shrine tomorrow. And that's a little spoiler alert. I'll be popping out a little early from the finale of the baseball game. Roger will finish it up tomorrow as I head north to Waco to be there with my two mentors and friends with all of those guys, really. And really, the late Frank Gleiber, I used to feed him his audio sound bites in the morning when I was working in news. Yes. At KRLD, and such a really nice man, and then I would record his sportscast that he would send back down from his home studio, and would cart those up and then play those on the air. He was a great, great broadcaster. Frank Lieber, he was a fixture in the tower at 17 at Augusta for CBS. So he was in the 60s and 70s, a big name, just like Bill Mercer was. So he has passed away. But the other guys, Bill Mercer, Brad Cham, Randy Galloway, Denny Freeman, those guys, Eric Nadell, of course, obviously, they are all being enshrined tomorrow as well.
Well, if you talk about a Mount Rushmore of our industry in this state, mm-hmm. I don't know if any combination of those four are on it.
Yeah.
But they're all in the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So so I am looking forward to that tomorrow night in Waco at the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, a special media induction. They've only had one other one in the past, and I think obviously Dave Campbell went in, Vern Lundquist went in, Mickey Herskowitz went in. There were some great, great Blackie Sherrod.
Freaking titans in our
Yeah,
our
absolutely.
Industry.
So there's it's very rare that they do it. So it's a media induction tomorrow night there in Waco.
When are you going in, Craig? When do you get that induction?
Please. I've got work to do.
And will Snoop be your presenter?
Yeah.
There we go. I got work to do. Kobe thing, I got to go to work or something like that. That deal. So there's something to that. We have the Specs text line open for your indulgence. 512-337-3776. That's 337-3776. Our good friend Victor says, Jeff, I made a delivery in your fine city of Florence. That's a sharp little town.
Man, good on you, Victor. Hopefully you had time to stop at Mono's and get some enchiladas or something before you go.
And the Colonel.
Out.
Craig Flowers is close to a perfect plank. Oh, so that's good.
That's where we are. The Colonel's doing planks. I'm eating a chicken biscuit at 10 in the morning, so just shows you kind of.
I was going to ask you what you had in the bag today from Chick-fil-A.
I don't go too crazy for breakfast. Just your standard chicken biscuit, some hash browns,
yeah,
a little tea.
Yeah.
You know me, I'm not a big coffee drinker.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had a little quasi-minor mishap with the coffee I stopped and picked up. It was at a different Starbucks that I went to because it was near a gas station. I needed to get some gas. And so then I go in there and I ordered off the app. The app is working today, by the way, for Starbucks.
Did you take out a yesterday? Loan? Take out a loan before you got to the pump?
I'm telling you. And especially because the car that I'm driving right now while the repairs are being done on my truck, it's a great vehicle, only takes super unleaded. Yeah.
Boy, that hurts.
Yeah. So, and you say, oh, you could put regular. Nah, not now with this engine in its age, you can't. I've had several mechanics tell me, nah, you done spoiled it on it now. You can't change it up now. Anyway.
So do you feel like, hey, just kick me in the junk before I
something like
fill
that.
Up the tank?
Something like that. So then I went in and I got my coffee, and I get in the car, and I zip out, and I'm heading out, and I take a taste, and I almost went on the windshield. It was correct. It was coffee. Just didn't have the cream and sugar in it. It was black. So I know a lot of people like black coffee, that drink black coffee. I don't. I like a little bit of cream and a little bit of sugar. So, but I just waited till I got here to the ARN compound and went back to our new, I won't say improved, but our new little cubby hole, our coffee clatch cubby hole that I know that Snoop has frequented before. You've been around the coffee clatch cubby hole, have you not? Back there in the back of the...
Yes, I have.
In the back there.
Don't turn the lights out, though, because you can't turn them back on.
Oh, really?
To find that out the hard way?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Didn't know that.
Yeah, don't turn the lights out.
Isn't there such a thing? Am I imagining this? You mentioned black coffee. Don't people use that for colonics or something of that
nature? It can be... Coffee, because of the caffeine and the properties in it, can be a bit of a diuretic.
So you just get like the turkey baster with some black coffee and just go to town?
Well, I wasn't talking about...
Talking about drinking.
I was talking about drinking it, not about, suppositorial input,
That's I don't know if that's a thing or if...
No, that's the name of a band in Austin, and suppositorial input, by the way.
If I fell for some kind of rib or something.
Yeah.
Might throw that in the Google machine.
You're throwing back, what is that? Is that a Coke? Zero?
Just your standard. See, when I'm on the road, I go the half sweet, half unsweet tea because I don't have time to stop and put the sweet and low
right.
or the Splenda in the tea.
Yep.
So I'll just cut it in half. I realize when I make orders like that, Craig, when I'm getting something to drink, I turn more and more into my dad the older I get, and it kind of weirds me out a little bit.
It's like those Progressive commercials turning into your parents.
Seriously,
right?
Like some of the stuff I complain about.
Nobody's here who made the movie. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting how you turn into your old man. The older you get.
So there was the I had the coffee, but that all I got here and dressed it up. So it's good to go. Also good to go. Longhorn baseball team last night. Jeff was there. And the Longhorns beat Kansas 12-4 last night. And the other results ensured the fact. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the update on that. First of all, Texas got a good enough. We've gotten spoiled watching Pete Hansen work. So I'd say a good enough effort out of Pete Hansen through six innings to pick up the victory, even though he gave up four runs in the sixth innings there, including a home run, and he's yielded a few home runs and extra base hits, a triple in the game, and all that sort of stuff. But good enough to keep them at arm's length. And then,
that one Metcalf hit was a
it was
tank.
A blast. It went across the street,
455 or 457, I think was the distance on that. And I think 108, 109 off the bat. Yeah,
he out Titanic'd the Titanic. Yet Ivan Melendez had another home run last night. He's at 27. He's one shy of the UT all-time single-season record of 28, posted by Kyle Russell back in 2007. Melendez up to 426 on the batting average, leading the nation in batting average as well and total bases. So he continues to just rake and get the numbers. But what's also good to see about this team is they've done it by and large this season, but now as they draw closer to the postseason, ramping it up even more, is to see not just a guy like Murphy Staley, who has been hitting at a high clip all season, but Doug Hodo's average well back above 300 again, and Mitchell Daly had a couple of hits, including a grand slam last night. So
barely got out, but it still counts.
Yes, it did.
Mitch can tell his grandkids one day that it was like a 475-foot just mammoth
monster shot,
light tower shot, but it just kind of just kept working. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Craig. You called it. We're kind of looking through the press box like, it's got a chance. It's kind of going down that left field line and just barely stayed inside the foul pole and into the Kansas bullpen.
Kansas has a second baseman by the name of Zach Cox. Now, he hasn't played much this season because Tavian Josenberger's the regular guy, but Josenberger's out injured, and he may not even see action this weekend at all. So Zach Cox gets in the ball game last night. He's batting 172. He was 1-for-12 in Big 12 plate appearances, 0-83. Yeah, three-hit night last night, including one that was just a little dink, little flick of the wrist shot off the bat that dropped in the shallow center. And, of course, Mike Harge, Hardball Harge, was working with me on the broadcast last night. He goes, you know what? And in the box score, that's a line drive, a scorcher is the way that works.
So while we're on the subject of team hitting, I want to bring this up because lost in just the Herculean effort that Ivan Melendez has put together this year.
Mm-hmm.
This offense, Craig, is on pace to be in the discussion for the most prolific Texas offenses we've ever seen. Now, that might sound blasphemous, but take this ride with me. The school record, just do a couple things. They've obliterated the single-season home run record for a Texas baseball team.
101 now.
Austin Todd hit number 82 back on April 30th and lost to Oklahoma State. They've done what they've done since then. When they tied the record at 81, they've hit 20 home runs since then to get to 101.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we kind of thought that was about as good a power production as you're ever going to see. When you had four guys, Ivan Melendez, Cam Williams, Zach Azubia, Mike Antico, all four guys – had double-digit home runs.
Right.
Well, you got Melendez with 27, as you said, one shy of tying Kyle Russell's school record. But you've also got Murphy Staley with 15, and that puts him in the top 10. He's tied for ninth right now of the all-time single-season best home run seasons we've seen at Texas. Oh, and by the way, Trey Faltini's got 14, so he's one away from joining that group. Silas Ardoin has 10. You've also got Skylar Messenger with 9, Doug Hodo with 8. So you've got guys up and down this lineup that can hit. Last season, and again, we thought 2021 was a special season offensively. That team had its flaws, including 578 strikeouts, which was a school record. This team right now, in addition to the 22 home run gap they've got between themselves and Kansas State for the Big 12 lead, they're hitting 321 at the close of business last night. Strikeout numbers are down. They've only got 427 through 54 games. The batting average, a 321 team average, if the season ended right now, it would be the best for a Texas team since the 1975 team, where the Keith Moreland-led team that won the national championship, hit 325 in 75. Also, this team is on pace to obliterate the school record for team slugging percentage. They're at 568 right now, or 564 right now. 508, 1974 is the school record. So they're on pace to obliterate that. And what's impressive about this team, Craig, is when you look at where they rank in terms of the Big 12, they're second in the Big 12 in on-base percentage. As a team, they've got 270 walks. And they lead the Big 12 with 55 sacrifice hits.
Yeah.
So you throw all that into consideration, it's as complete of offense as I've seen since I've been following Texas baseball.
Yeah.
When you just look at the production.
Yeah. Yeah. They've really done a job. Sack bunts, 27. Sacrifice flies, 28. As you mentioned, 55 sacrifices all told. That's impressive. And here's the other thing that's impressive to me. They're batting 321, as you mentioned, as a team. In Big 12 play, where the team average normally drops a bit, they're batting 321. Yeah. Identically, 321 both overall. Now, for those who are saying, wait a minute, you know, what about the pitching? The pitching it actually leads the Big 12 as well. Now, Big 12 ERA has not been the great. It's a full run higher than the overall, which is 4.19. And four runs in college baseball for a team ERA is considered respectable. We just got used to seeing that team ERA in the low threes to high twos in the past. And that's where they're still trying to get things worked out. One thing that was impressive to see last night also is Tristan Stevens come back out of the bullpen like he did the other day and go foof, 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 just to shut down. He had back-to-back strikeouts. So it would beg the question, could he possibly go into the closer role, or is it just a setup situation? He obviously is unfettered mentally by going into a game with runners on base. He entered with the bases loaded and one out and got back-to-back strikeouts. I know, it was Kansas. I get it. But just it's a good ramp-up to what could come at Arlington next week if he indeed draws the assignment of coming out of the bullpen. He only threw 10 pitches, which means a couple of things with regard to the rest of this weekend series. He could be available again to come out of the pen. If he doesn't see action tonight, it is possible he could start on Saturday.
Yeah.
So that is still to be determined, as well as Zane Morehouse's role is still to be determined. We know Lucas Gordon's obviously going to start tonight.
And David Pierce told us last night they are prepared. If they need to use Tristan Stevens today, they will use him.
Yes. Yeah. If they need to, they would definitely do that. And speaking of Coach Pierce, he visited with Hardball Harge. Mike Harge was down on the field with him after the game last night, heard here on the Horn.
You started off the series the way that you wanted to, but let's talk about the pitching staff right away. You got Tristan Stevens in the game, but let's start with Pete Hansen. Pete Hansen doing what Pete Hansen likes to do. But then you got your guys into the game, and you didn't want to use some of the guys, but you brought them in at the right time. So tell us a little bit about tonight.
Well, first of all, it's a great win for our team. Big time Friday night, great crowd. Everything was, everything was nice. Just good to see our kids compete. But Pete was, he was sharp. Pretty tight zone today, but, he's the type of guy that you deal with or you want dealing with that. I thought he threw some really good changeups, good sliders, but he just commanded the fastball. They got a couple in there. They got a good hitting team. They really do. And so proud of him. Travis, trying to get him right, struggled a little bit. Good signs from Jared and Nick's. But Tristan Stevens was the pitcher of the night. And you face 3-4, both those kids can hit with bases loaded, one out, two big punch outs, which, the game could have changed completely. So proud of those guys getting Southern, Nixon. We're still trying to get guys right and getting closer.
Yeah, you're definitely getting closer, and you're right. He came in and threw 10 pitches and got you out of that inning. That was big stuff by him. But let's talk about your offense, too. Douglas Hodo kind of sets the table, and then Melendez gets one out of the yard. But Mitchell Daly got a chance to get up there and do some things at the plate, too. I know you've been working hard with him to get him going. That's a good sign headed into the rest of the weekend and then next week as well.
No doubt. I mean, Ivan's Ivan. I mean, he's a presence in the box, and I don't think anybody really wants to pitch to him. But, you know, I just love his approach, and he stays in the middle of the field in his mind. And big night for Hodo, big night for Dougie, big night for Silas, and really great to see that with Mitch because he's struggled a little bit, but, I mean, just the power's in there. He can go gap to gap, and when he gets the ball that – he's on time with on the pull side. He's got pretty good power as well. But that was big for him. I mean, he's been, like I said, struggling a little bit, but he never stops working. And that's the whole thing about this entire team. We've had setbacks, but doesn't affect them.
Well, talk a little bit about Silas Ardoin. You talked about him at the plate, but what does he mean to this team behind the plate, getting these pitchers under control and being able to control the whole game, whether it's calling pitches or even stopping the running game?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, we put so much pressure on him to catch so many innings, and he wants to do it. But, you know, you think at this time of the year starts beating up his legs and affects his offense. But the kid's durable. He's durable. He gets his rest. He eats right, does everything right. And what a leader. I mean, the kid's, you know, pitching staff really looks up to him. He's the face of the defense and really proud of our defense. It gets a little bit overlooked right now. But, I mean, it's the best I've ever had, and they just keep making plays.
Yeah, and that's the reason why, you know, they've posted some of the numbers they have. Now, with regard to where they are in terms of the regional stuff and things like that, here's a couple of facts just to toss to you here. TCU won their non-conference game last night against Santa Clara 7-6. It was important for the Frogs. They need to not have a slip-up. Mm-hmm. TCU clinched at least a tie for the conference title. They were already tweeting out the Big 12 championship tweets this morning and all that. TCU baseball did. So they've clinched at least a tie for the conference title. They've not clinched the number one seed yet because Oklahoma beat Texas Tech in a slugfest on the South Plains last night.
Six bombs?
Yeah.
For Oklahoma last night?
Yeah, wind must have been blowing out at Dan Law. Well, wind's always blowing out at Dan Law there. But they won last night 13-8. So Oklahoma is 14-8. Texas Tech now is 14-8. And Oklahoma State dropped to 13-9. The Cowboys had a 10-2 lead on Baylor and let it get away. Baylor with an 8-run 7 that come back. Ultimately, they win it on a walk-off two-run homer in the bottom of the 10th inning.
Pokes were up 11-3.
That's it, 11-3.
Heading to the bottom of the 7th.
Yeah.
And lost.
Well, they got a taste of how that other side, wow, because remember when they were down 7-0 in the 7th to Texas.
And cost themselves a share of the conference championship.
Yep. Yep. They could still finish as high as number 2 in the league. But, yes, their chances of winning the Big 12, which a little over a week ago today, we were saying they were in the driver's seat,
mm-hmm,
to win the Big 12. And now they won't even share in the conference title. The best they can finish is second place right now.
Shoes on the other foot for TCU this year in a good way. Because remember last year going into the last weekend, Texas needed to sweep West Virginia, and they needed a lot of help, and they got it from K-State.
Yeah, that's true.
Because TCU blew, I think it was the Saturday game, the season finale. TCU blew a big run, a big lead late.
To Kansas State.
Yeah.
Remember that crazy game, and Dylan Phillips had a big home run in that and all that. You're right. That's exactly what happened there. So TCU will at least share the conference title at the very least. They could win it outright. If Oklahoma and Texas Tech split the next two games, the Frogs will win it outright at 16-8 in the league. Texas is at 12-10. The best that the Longhorns could do would be to finish they could finish actually, just taking a look at that, I guess in a tie for fourth is where they're going to be. So expect Texas to be in that 4-5 game at 9 in the morning next Wednesday. Because like I said, you know, it's amazing. All those years in Oklahoma, the Big 12 would not release the bracket or the start time until after the games on Sunday because they wanted to maximize whatever Oklahoma school or schools they could get into the evening bracket, and they used to deny that all the time. We all knew better. And so now here it is, you know, first year not in the state of Oklahoma. And, oh, look, lo and behold, you got brackets with times done.
Could this be a deal where they talk to the three teams, really, I guess going into the weekend, kind of the four teams, TCU Tech, Oklahoma State, that had a mathematical chance to be the number one seed, and say, hey, which time? What time do you guys want to play?
Yeah.
And could it be a deal where they all just said, yeah, we're good playing the 12:30?
They used to do that. They used to ask the one seed that. They started doing that after the year that Texas won the regular season and got put in the 9 a.m. game because they wanted Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, they wanted in the evening bracket. And they didn't, you know, just said, Texas plays at 9 a.m. And I know Augie was furious about that. Then they were like, yeah, we probably should have asked you about that. Anyway, and I think Texas ended up winning that tournament that year anyway when that happened. But in any event, TCU has clinched at least a share for the conference title. Congratulations to the Texas State Bobcats.
Heck yeah.
Your alma mater.
The old alma mater getting it done.
Sun Belt Conference regular season. They had to rally. They scored three late and ended up winning it 8-7 over Georgia State. They're 42-11 now. So they could conceivably, if Ty Harrington and I were talking about this, if they won the next two games and then went through the Sun Belt tournament without loss, they'd be at 48 wins. And at that point, yeah, there's more hope at that point for them possibly being a regional host. Somebody, you know, yesterday, our good friends at Occupy Left Field were dismayed over what I said when I was on with Ball Don't Lie with them, and I said, when they were asking about, well, can Texas host a regional? I said, it's a slight chance. It's a little chance that they could do it. And that's, they did a meme of a guy jumping out of a window, said, hearing Craig Way say that. And I said, I tweeted back, I replied, and I said they had little chance, not no chance. Right. And then somebody else tweeted and said, fifth place in the conference. What argument is there that Texas should host? First of all, it's not done yet that they're going to be in fifth. They could wind up fourth. And would wind up being the top on the tiebreak, being the four seed there. So there's that in a very highly rated RPI conference. They have a very good RPI. There's all kinds of things like that to factor into it. But as I have said over the past several days, it's the performance of the other schools in the state around them. Texas A&M won last night.
Yep.
TCU won last night. Texas Tech looked as though it played its way right into hosting again. They didn't help themselves by losing at home to Oklahoma last night. If the Sooners have a successful weekend, if they win one more out of the two, and we know the Texans had trouble on Sundays, so if that happens, then maybe they play their way off the grid again. But you have TCU and Texas A&M as you know, likely now regional host, and maybe even more so in the case of the Aggies, if they run the table and win all three against Ole Miss, there's the projection that they could be a top eight national seed. Not out of the realm of possibility by any stretch. So those are the biggest obstacles right now to attack in the here and now. The earlier obstacles that you pointed out so astutely yesterday, Jeff, the loss, losing the series to Kansas State, and the inability to win even one game against Oklahoma State. Two wins make a world of difference, yeah, in that case. Didn't happen, so now they have to shoot for the best that they can do, whatever that might be. And if that means running the table, being at 39 wins going into the conference tournament, you run the table. If you win four in a row and you win the conference tournament title, you're sitting at 43 wins. Even if you drop a game, then it might be 45 wins because you have to win a couple more, yeah, through the elimination bracket or something like that. Maybe that gets, well, everything gets factored in. But it's the outside performances now at this point.
Yeah,
because you're relying on the grace of others to knock those off.
By the way, Oklahoma with that win last night pretty much cancels out their loss to Wichita State because they jumped up seven spots in the RPI.
Yeah, that'll
overnight.
Do that. So there. And I did talk to David Pierce more about that when he was musing about the possibility of tossing out the lowest RPI, yeah, score like at school. And he said, yeah, that could be one possibility. We also discussed the possibility maybe you toss out two, your lowest rated RPI win and your lowest rated RPI loss. You could do that, or just your two lowest RPIs if you did that, results, win or lose. So, yeah, there's different ways to approach it with regard to the whole RPI thing.
As my late father was fond of saying, more than one way to skin a cat, son.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up, Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor, and we'll discuss him in the aftermath, the fallout, if you will, of the Addison decision. We'll do that when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Greg Ray, Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel alongside. As CB says, happy birthday to Chris Obanaya. Yeah, it's good to hear that. So somebody asked, is Dylan Campbell okay? He's replaced by Eric Kennedy. Guessing they were splitting time. You guessed correctly. David Pierce talked about it in the pregame. They're ramping up Kennedy, making sure the hamstring felt good. It did. It obviously looked like it was pretty good shape when he made that nice sprint to catch the fly ball and throw back to second for a double play to end the inning, doubling off the runner there. So that was good to see. Good,
yeah.
Healthy to see him do
that. There was
that.
Also the Metcalf home run where he wasn't going to test the hamstring. He just kind of watched it.
No
watched
point.
It go.
Yep. Just watch that thing sail right on out of there.
Indeed.
All right. It's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
And since it is Friday, we go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, bring in the best in the Texas market, covering recruiting, all things recruiting on the gridiron on the 40 acres. He is the recruiting editor at Horns 24/7. He is Mike Roach, fresh off, I might add, of a trip to our fair burg for the Vandegrift spring game. Mike, how are you this morning?
Good, fellas. A little tired, but doing good.
Mike, the vernacular might be for Longhorn fans this morning, these words, and I quote, "And then depression set in." You know, but not that anybody should have been shocked about Jordan Addison's decision there. I mean, you know, in you've been around Coach Sark a great deal. So has Jeff. Obviously, I've been on a couple of plane flights with him recently and around. And his word always was going to be, you know, we're waiting and waiting, and they were waiting on the family. Even Wednesday night, coming back from Houston, they were in a family meeting, and Sark had touched base with them right before we got on the plane to come back home. This thing was going down, apparently, to the 11th hour, which I know surprised some folks that it ended up being that protracted a length of time before he finally decided to go to USC. But that I guess, is a tip of the hat to how the Texas coaching staff made really and truly of what you have pointed out their best possible presentation and best foot forward in that recruiting process.
Yeah, you know, it was I just kind of said from the beginning that if he leaves Texas uncommitted, you know, then they're in a fight, and that was kind of the case. And you know, I think the telling thing was when we talked to people throughout the weeks, nobody had a strong feeling on it. And usually you'll have one or two guys willing to go out on a limb and say, okay, yeah, we feel really good about this. And there was just nobody like that. So, you know, for me, I just never had the feeling that Texas was going to win it. I think we tried to illustrate that in most of the stuff we wrote. USC was kind of the favorite from the beginning. They just had a lot more ties. You know, Texas just had Brennan Marion. It turns out that wasn't enough. But, you know, I think they gave it everything they could and made it a real, you know, kind of a real fight.
Mike, what's your take just on – I know we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's worth hitting again – just how Brennan Marion is approaching building that receiver room through recruiting in conjunction with – Sark's philosophy, where they're not being rigid in, you know, pigeonholing guys into certain positions. You look at Ryan Niblett, who's committed, or Jonte Cook, and go down the list of their targets. They're just looking for guys that can run to daylight, and game breakers when they got the ball in their hands.
Yeah, I think that looking for guys that can exploit, you know, time and space, and that's kind of become what football is finding open space and being able to run through it. And, you know, I think there are a little more defined roles, with Brennan Marion. You know, I do think he wants a little bit, you know, more of a true X and things like that, but it's not as rigid as it's always been. And so it allows you to do a lot of different things and recruit a lot of different guys.
Mike, let's get to that Vandegrift spring game last night. And you know, we talked with you before about the recruitment of Ian Reed, the big offensive tackle over there for Coach Sanders and the Vipers. Where are things at with Ian Reed after you, you know, saw him last night? Any impressions? And then just overall, you know, what is the outlook right now for O-line recruiting in 23 for Texas?
I think it's still really solid. We did our it's been a weird morning because we had to do state of recruiting this morning, and so it was an early morning show after driving back last night. And I think I said on there that it's an odd situation being in where every high profile offensive lineman you check on, it's like, yeah, Kyle Flood's doing a great job, because it wasn't always the case under the last few offensive line coaches. And I think Kyle Flood has done a great job with this one. I really like Ian. I think he has potential to be the top offensive lineman in the state of Texas by the end of this whole deal. I just really like his potential that much. I think Texas is in a great spot. They're going to get the last visit, which is a great position for them to be in. There's some schools to watch out there. Certainly, he's going to Clemson. He's going to Wisconsin. He's going to camp at Alabama. But in the end, I think that Texas getting that last visit is going to put them in a really good position to land him. And I think outlook over the offensive line class as a whole is Kyle Flood's doing what he needs to do. He proved that last year, and I think he'll continue to prove it this year.
Talking recruiting here with Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach here on the Horn, here on Light the Tower. I don't know if this is being said in jest, fellas, but somebody said, Jeff, is Hall still in play? I don't know if that's a humorous reference.
Yeah, he never
wasn't.
He never wasn't in play. However, I know I said some double negatives there. What is that redundancy thing you say, Craig?
From the Department of Redundancy Department?
Something like that, yeah. Mm. Yes, don't worry about it, Jai Hall, at this point.
Yeah. Mike, does something like that also amuse you and take you by surprise, or is this just the day and age that we can live in where that big a misunderstanding can happen because of some slipshod reporting, to be quite honest, in what happened in the state of Alabama?
Yeah, I just thought it was bad reporting. I mean, it's just awful reporting. I mean, I remember when we've got a group text for the Horns 24/7 group, and it was brought up to us that, hey, they're writing this because he's no longer on the roster. And Jeff and I were immediately like, he was never on the roster. He's not involved at the school. it's the basics of journalism, I think we've lost sight of some of that. And it gets really frustrating just because it's like, oh, God, now I have to go fight the story and refute it. And it's like, I shouldn't even be doing that. So.
Well, it's just been a rough week in the state of Alabama overall, I'd say, probably, which, by the way, brings up this is merely and purely hypothetical. However, as a guy who studies it and lives it and writes it and works the recruiting game as well as you do, what's been your these things don't happen often, but when there is a public spat going on between two high profile coaches, what's been your take on what coaches say from the outside viewing it in, and how, if in any way, shape, or form, it affects what's going on with recruiting for the two programs involved in this spat?
Yeah, I think just like us, those coaches, outside coaches think it's funny. They get really into it. And I remember I sent it out to a couple coaches I know, and like the first reaction was like, it's not real. And I was like, I mean, it's real. I know the reporter. I've met the reporter. He's verified on Twitter. Like, I don't think he would just make something up. And then when the video, came out, I sent it back to make sure they all had it. But I think everybody has fun with it, but at the same time, most people are like, hey, let's drop the charade here. We know everybody's doing this. It's funny that Saban chose to call them out, but it's not as if their closets are clean either.
Hey, Mike, I want to get your take on this. The NCAA, the Division I Council, passed a couple of rules changes this week, including for the next two athletic years, eliminating. And it kind of makes me sad because I no longer have numbers to track now, and I pride myself on being the numbers guy, eliminating that 25 initial counter rule. And how do you make scholarships work, and what can you roll back? What do you think this does, not just for Texas, but for college football as a whole, where for the next 2 years, at least the next two athletic years, schools don't have to worry about your counter numbers. You just got to make sure you're managing the 85.
Yeah, well, it makes it easier on me, I'll tell you that. Jeff and I did a lot of napkin math last year at the end of that cycle, trying to figure out how Texas was going to fit all the people they were trying to fit into this class in. And so now that makes it a little easier. I think you've just got to have somebody who has a really strong idea of roster management. And I think Billy Glasscock's that for Texas. Just an idea of, okay, this is what we've got, this is what we can sign. And then, I think that it's just another step of making college football look a little more like the NFL. I think it gives license to schools to be a little more aggressive, pushing out bottom of the roster players and churning the bottom of that roster, by bringing in new guys if you're not performing. So, we'll see kind of how it benefits Texas, but, they went big in this past class. I think you'll see them go big again in this class. And I think, Steve Sarkisian has shown that he's not going to stop until he's got kind of the roster where he wants it to be.
You can get him on Twitter at MikeRoach247. That's at MikeRoach247. No dashes, no slashes. You can get that State of Recruiting podcast. If you're a Longhorn Blitz subscriber, you get it when it drops on Fridays. If you're not, search Horns247. That's Horns247. No dashes, no slashes. Anywhere you get your podcast, click that follow button to get the podcast when it drops. You can also get the Longhorn Blitz podcast when it drops on Tuesdays. And you can always find his work at Horns247. He is our recruiting editor, Mike Roach.
Hey, Mike, are you at any games, any spring games today, tomorrow, whatever, or 7-on-7 this weekend?
Yeah, we'll be at the South Oak Cliff spring game tonight and go see the state champions and see what they've got. And then I actually am working camp in, I can't ever say this correctly. Mm-hmm. You've probably been there, so you're going to correct me. Natchitoches, Louisiana.
You're close. Yeah, most people there call it Natchitoches with a hard C, Natchitoches. But that's close enough. It's close enough there at Northwestern State. Very good. All right. Hey, safe travels, Mike, on those highways and byways. Appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Mike Roach. Always going to go take a look at those defending state champions in 5AD2, the Golden Bears.
Mecca.
Of South Oak Cliff. Somebody had asked, before we get to the break here, somebody had asked when we were talking about baseball, about Kyle Russell, 28 home runs, and here's Ivan Melendez, one off of that pace. And somebody asked, did Kyle get to 28 home runs in the postseason, or was that all regular season? It included the postseason because I just looked it up. He hit his 28th and final home run of that season in the first inning of the regional opener against Brown at Dell Diamond. Remember, that was the year the Longhorns played the regional Dell Diamond and got knocked out by UC Irvine. Mm-hmm. The Anteaters did it. And in that Friday night game in the regional, Kyle Russell hit his 28th home run. But the NCAA doesn't separate regular season from postseason. It's all in one fell swoop.
It's just like, bowl statistics count. Yes, now, or that hasn't always been the case.
No, but they do count as part, and I always thought they should. It's part of your season. So same thing with postseason baseball as well. So yes, Kyle Russell hit his 28th home run in the their first NCAA regional game. That was against Brown. And Ivan Melendez says, two more shots just in the regular season, if you want to separate it, to catch Kyle Russell in that. Tonight is the next opportunity at 6:30 against Kansas. Up next, Inconceivable here when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Flex ATX brings you high school.
Inconceivable!
You keep using the Horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, there you go. By the way, before we get, somebody said, what's the all-time single-season home run record? Do you all think Ivan Melendez could break it? No, it's 48. No. Pete Incaviglia hit 48 in that bandbox of a ballpark in Oklahoma State. So, no, he's not breaking that record.
You know what's an underrated season, too? I was looking at this.
Yeah.
What Lance Berkman did at Rice in 97?
Yeah.
Hit 431, slugged 1032, 41 bombs, 134 RBI, scored 109 runs, 110 hits.
Those are other numbers that Ivan won't approach, other than maybe batting average. He could do batting average. He's only 5 points off that pace. But the rest of those, You said 41 home runs?
41.
Yeah. Ivan's great, but it would have to take a deep, deep run into Omaha with him red hot.
Hey, real quick, though, how much do we take into consideration how much bat technology has changed?
Sure.
From that era of college baseball to now.
Yeah, the trampolining of bats, so to speak. They've gone through the...
Like we said, when the BB Corps bat started, they've improved a lot since, what was that, 2012 or 13, somewhere around there?
Yes.
To where it more closely mimics a wooden bat much Absolutely. Better than it did 10 years ago.
Yep, no question about it. So it's made a difference there. Okay, on Inconceivable we go. You guys are into collectibles and things like this.
Of course.
Mercedes has just sold the world's most expensive car.
Mm.
Care to take a guess?
Most expensive car. I'm going to guess. I'm going to say $8
million. How about $142 million? Now.
So what?
Here's why. It's a very rare 1955 Mercedes-Benz SLR coupe that had been kept in Mercedes-Benz collection, sold to a private owner for the equivalent of $142 million. That price makes it the most expensive car known to ever have been sold, according to Hagerty, the company that tracks collector car values. The car then was promptly turned over to Bijan Robinson for endorsement. No, that's not what it said. Did not say that. Money from the sale will be used to establish the Mercedes-Benz Fund, which is a global scholarship fund. So there is a scholarship thing.
$142 million for a car.
Previous record was $70 million for a 1963 Ferrari 250 GTO. So,
okay, I was way off on the price of what high-end cars go for.
Well, it's a collector. I mean, I'm not.